Get ready for a parenting adventure. Welcome to Little Adventures Parenting and Beyond, the podcast that explores all things family. From child development to mental health, we've got you covered. Join us for a fun and informative discussion with expert guests and real-life parents. Let's go on an adventure.
So welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Little Adventures Podcast. We are so excited to have you with us. Today, we have a special guest, Alicia Cook, with us, and she is a therapist and performance coach, and she's going to go ahead and answer some questions that we might have related to all the great things that she does, and then she's going to give us some resources, so tune in and have some fun. So we're going to start off with, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to become a therapist and performance coach?
Yeah, absolutely. My background, as far as school goes, I got my bachelor's in psychology, my master's in clinical mental health counseling. What led me to that place, I mean, pretty early on, probably by the time I was 15, 16, I kind of knew I wanted to be in psychology career somewhere. I was always very interested about why we do the things that we do, just kind of like human behavior and thoughts and everything like that. So that's kind of what led me in that direction. And then since I received my master's in 2015, I'd say the last year or two, I've focused more on a coaching aspect, which has been fun and different for me because it allows me to be way more interactive with clients. It helps us work on, you know, very specific goals that we can typically meet sometimes a lot faster than like typical therapy that, you know, sometimes we're in therapy working on an issue for years. So the coaching is something different. It enables me to kind of connect in a different way with clients that I really enjoy. Maybe in a faster timeline than what therapy can sometimes result in.
That's really cool that you can do that, because as somebody who's gone to therapy for a really long time, I didn't realize there was such a big difference between coaching versus therapy. Because I know, like, I feel like my therapy lasts forever and I feel like I'm getting everywhere pretty slowly. So, like, I think coaching would be like a lot better for me personally.
And
get it done and keep on moving.
Well, I think that speaks to where are we the best fit, right? Is therapy the best fit for me right now, or could coaching be a better fit for me? And honestly, I think it depends on the person. I would say therapy is much gentler, depending on the type of therapist. And of course, we have so many different kinds of therapists and coach now that have all different modalities of how they approach working with their clients. So whether it's therapy or coaching, I say the number one thing to look at as far as am I going to get what I want out of this actually has nothing to do with the type of therapy. It's all about the relationship you have with your therapist. So our research shows us that it's actually the relationship that we have with our therapist that helps us lead to what we would say a positive outcome of therapy. Another way to think about it is too, like, okay, I go to therapy maybe because I want to work on anxiety. Well, we know that anxiety isn't necessarily something that we're never going to experience again. However, hopefully out of therapy, we're getting tools, we're getting an understanding, we're finding ourselves able to work through the anxiety so it's not impacting our life as severely as it once was.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I feel like nowadays we hear so many people have anxiety, and we're using that term interchangeably with so many different things. So can you kind of explain like what you feel anxiety is, and then, you know, why you feel it's becoming more prevalent in our society?
Yeah, absolutely. I view anxiety as a feeling that we can recognize, or it can also show up as a thought. So humans in general, we tend to be either, if you think about a spectrum with thinking on one side and feeling on the other, we tend to lean at least a little bit in one of the directions. We may notice our feelings first, or we may notice our thoughts first. Some people are very far leaning on one side, where they may, like, for example, with anxiety, for example, they may feel their heart racing, they may feel sick to their stomach, and they may not have any awareness of a thought that could be playing a role in that feeling. Whereas the other side of the spectrum, those of us who are more on the thinking side, we're very aware of anxious thoughts. I'm worrying about something. It could be consistent. It could be, if we think about like obsessive compulsive kinds of thoughts, I have to lock this door 3 times. If I don't, somebody's going to break in. So that would be, and they may not have any feelings associated with those thoughts. So those are the two far sides of the spectrum, and everyone typically falls somewhere in between. Okay. Honestly, I like to look at the superpowers that those of us who experience anxiety have, because, you know, if you think about what anxiety is, underlying everything, it's a fear. We're afraid of something, we're worried about something, and fear can help keep us safe. That's the purpose of anxiety. It's to protect us. If you think about, if I never experienced any sense of anxiety or worry, I could walk down a back alley in the middle of the night and not have any regard for my well-being.
That's true.
So that's the far side of that extreme, right? What happens when, you know, anxiety starts becoming a difficulty in our life that leads us to, let's say, a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder, that's when it's trying to protect us in moments when we don't actually need the protection. It's our brain is telling us that there's danger, we're not safe, and in reality, that may not be true.
I feel like a lot of moms have that. I know, like we have that overprotective feeling, so we get those like fight or flight responses with our kids, even though it's not a flight or fright reason. Like, I know I had like such like intrusive thoughts, like, oh my gosh, this is gonna fall off the ceiling and crush my kid, even though like the ceiling fan is obviously secure up there, but in my head it's gonna, you know, wail off and behead my child. And like, I think especially like as new moms, this happens so often. We get all these like scary thoughts because everything is so new to us and we're just trying to like keep our baby alive.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like you become like hyper aware of things around you.
For sure.
As a new parent, or even just, you know, as a seasoned parent, because, you know, society's changing, everything around you is changing. So you're just constantly trying to make sure that not only your anxiety is at a standstill, not projecting that onto your children as well.
Yes. And I think it's interesting too, we can look at, sometimes when we think about anxiety as like a mental health disorder, it doesn't help us accept the fact that we're experiencing anxiety. But if we can look at it as more of a normal experience that most people in the world have, there's the anxiety speaks to a sense, you said the word already, awareness. We have an increased sense of awareness. And again, it can help us in certain situations, such as when we're getting ready to cross the street with our kids and we hear a car down the road, or, you know, there's different situations where it absolutely can be helpful. And I think one of the things I work on a lot in the coaching aspect is our mindset. You know, what is our mindset? If the story I tell myself about having anxiety is that, you know, it keeps me from living a life that I want and it gets in my way to enjoy my moments, then that's what our experience is going to be. If I can look at, okay, this anxiety is trying to help me, you know, accomplish keeping my children alive. It's trying to keep me aware to make sure that our surroundings are safe. And I can also acknowledge sometimes it really does get in my way, which is one of the most important reasons that we would seek to find ways to cope and work through our anxiety in a way that helps us function better, right?
Right. So with kind of all of that, we know that some people struggle with, you know, relationships with themselves and others, and, you know, it could impact their mental health or well-being. So what are some tips that you have for improving our relationships with others and ourselves? Because that could be related to anxiety, but it could be related to other things as well.
Absolutely. You know, I am a relational therapist, so I do see most things in life in relation to each other. I think the relationship with ourself plays such a huge role in the relationship we have with everyone and everything around us. You know, a lot of us grow up to not really develop a healthy self-esteem, to not feel super confident, you know, in just our experience of life in general, right? We have on one far extreme perfectionism, where we feel like we have to do everything perfect. And that plays a big role, I think, in a lot of lives for moms. And I think that's where a lot of our, you know, mom guilt, quote unquote, can come from too, when we have this thought in our mind that it has to look a particular way. So one of the biggest tips I think that I could say helps us work on that relationship we have with ourselves is becoming familiar and practicing self-compassion. Self-compassion is probably one of the most helpful tools that we can all teach ourselves. And it's quite literally, you know, we all know what compassion is. We're raised to be compassionate towards others, right? To be kind towards others. We don't necessarily get taught that we need to also turn that inward and be kind towards ourselves.
You should teach a whole class on self-compassion because yeah. Like, I feel like every mom has that mom guilt and that, like, the anger about not being enough or, mm-hmm. you know, just feeling like, oh my gosh, we're going to mess up our kids. I mean, just recently I was beating myself up about something that happened and my friend Courtney was like, you do realize you do so much for your kids, right? And I was like, but I didn't do this one thing. And she's like, and they'll be fine. But I was like in tears because I didn't do, you know, one thing, but I do all these other things. It was just like, it really gets you. Like those little tiny things really get you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like the constant comparing of yourself now that we have like social media everywhere and you're just seeing, yep. you know, okay, your life versus everybody else's. And you start to like internalize certain things that really are outrageous to think that you should be exactly like somebody else. But you kind of forget that you need to just have compassion for yourself. And you're doing the best that you can do in that moment.
100%. And I think that speaks a lot too towards being more in control of, let's say for social media, for example, the content that we're taking in. You know, am I choosing to follow people that every time I see their pictures, I'm having those comparison thoughts, whether it's I'm comparing up, right, where I'm like looking at them and wishing that I had what they had, or I'm comparing downward where I'm thinking, oh, well, I have, you know, more than them, or I'm in a better place than them. Neither one really helps us. I think part of human nature is we naturally have a tendency to judge, and that's okay. That's part of our humanness. The important factor is what do I choose to do with that judgment?
Yeah, and that's the hard part because it's like you're on Facebook or Instagram and TikTok and you're seeing all these things and you're seeing all these things these parents are doing for their kids and places that they're going and like, I mean, obviously you don't know the reasoning behind that, how they got to that spot, how they were able to do those things. But it's like, mm-hmm. you think like, well, why can't I do that for my kids? If she can do it, why can't I? And then you're like stressing and trying to cram a million things to do the perfect Pinterest birthday party and to do the, you know, the special St. Patrick's Day pancakes and all just for what? For someone else to be like, oh, wow, I want to be like her. You know, the kids don't care. They're just happy they're getting pancakes with sprinkles on it, you know? Right.
And that may be, you know, the factor that you consider of, okay, you know, this really didn't make a huge difference in the connection or the relationship I have with my child. It was more for myself.
Yeah. Feeling like you can do it all. And it's Facebook and Instagram really kind of get you there.
That when I say paying attention to the content that we follow, there are plenty, and I feel I would be happy to share different pages with you guys. There are plenty of pages that promote just this realistic mothering, right? Realistic parenthood that is not about perfection, that speaks to the point of everything you see on social media is not true. It is not real. It is literally one moment in their lives. And everybody, you know, when I think about, let's say the mom pages that literally are all just to give you different ideas of activities. I mean, that is one thing that she is creatively, creatively blessed in, right? Maybe that's one of her specialties. That's something she put so much energy and effort into doing with her children for whatever her personal reasons are. And she's sharing it now to help others. And I think that's one beautiful thing we can see in social media, because there's a lot of downsides, right? But how can we use it to benefit us? And I think one of the ways we can use it to benefit us is to just think about the fact of, we are probably one of the first generations of parents to have so many resources. Sometimes it's overwhelming how many resources we have, right? And our parents, right, they didn't have, all they had was like their mom that they could call and say, what do I do right now? They didn't have research. They didn't have people who literally spent their lives studying very specific things. You know, I think about like my social media content, because I'm so passionate about this. I very rarely will see like random people show up on my page. It's all parenting related, relationship related. It is very easy for me too, just to become overwhelmed if I'm sitting there scrolling. It's so much information to take in. And the positive of it, it's information that is bound to help me with what I personally value, which is the relationships in my life, especially with my children.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think that can really give us a good segue into something that you're really passionate about, which is the conscious parenting. So that's been gaining popularity recently. Can you give us like a definition of what conscious parenting is and why it is important?
Yes, absolutely. So conscious parenting, the term was coined back in 2010, actually. So it's been around longer, I think, than a lot of us realize. Dr. Shefali Saberi is the author, the one who coined the term. She has a Conscious Parenting Institute where she actually will train people to become conscious parent coaches.
Oh, wow.
And then since then, there has been many people, you know, we hear a lot of different terms now, right? We hear gentle parenting, respectful parenting, natural parenting, right? There's all these different terms that we've coined. But focusing specifically on conscious parenting, you know, it really focuses on attachments. It prioritizes the relationship we have to our children over everything else. So you hear like gentle parenting, and sometimes I think the risk when we think about gentle parenting is we have an assumption or a story that we tell ourselves that it's permissive, right? That we let our kids just do whatever they want and we just always respond gently. And it's a very big misconception. Gentle parenting is like a set of tools that enable us to set boundaries. And that is a huge part of gentle parenting. I heard someone say once that conscious parenting is always gentle. Gentle parenting is not always conscious. So the extra step that that conscious parenting takes is becoming more self-aware, becoming more aware of, why am I doing or reacting in the way that I am in my parenting relationship? So for example, we've all had a situation where, you know, our children are throwing a tantrum. Maybe I know in my house, the famous one is always when we're trying to get out the door to go somewhere, whether it's school, whether we've got an appointment, whatever it is. And that's the morning that our kids are, you know, maybe they woke up on the wrong side of the bed. They're going through whatever it is they're going through. A lot of times, all we're thinking about is, hey, I gotta be to work at this time. I got to get them to school at this time. A lot of it comes down to, it's easier to say, get your shoes on, or you put their shoes on for them, carry them out the door while they're screaming, whatever the scenario ends up being. Conscious parenting would have us look at our piece in that conflicting situation. What is it about me? Because what we tend to do is we tend to think it's our children. Oh, they're being difficult. They won't put their shoes on. They're giving me a hard time, right? That's the natural tendency we have. Conscious parenting asks us to take a step back and say, okay, it's important to me that I get somewhere on time. Right now, my child is having a hard time. They're not giving me a hard time. And my role as a parent, conscious parent, is to try to connect with my child before I try to correct them. So again, if we think about the idea of the primary goal of conscious parenting is to develop a securely attached, healthy relationship. It goes beyond, you know, I think of gentle parenting as it's more like tools to try to, you know, sometimes I think we have this idea of, oh, just give me all the tips and tricks that get my kids to do what I want them to do.
Right.
That is not conscious parenting. Conscious parenting is understanding that our children are their own unique individual selves, that we don't have to have power and control over them all of the time, to try to develop a relationship in which we work together. And, you know, our research, and I think a lot of this came about because it's not until we're adults, right? I work with a lot of young adults, and we can easily recognize some of the issues within our relationship to self, and we're able to connect a lot of that to how we were treated as children. And it's not to say that as a parent, we have 100% control of how our children turn out as humans. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is that the relationship we have with our child plays a huge role in the relationships that they have with everybody and everything outside of them as they become adults.
I read somewhere that kids develop their personality in the first 7 years of life, and how they react through the rest of their life is developed in the first 7 years. And that kind of got me, because TJ is seven. And I was just thinking about all the ways I have interacted with him over the past 7 years. And I see that in his personality. I see like his kindness, his gentleness, his manners. But then I also see Patrick, who it's been a tough 2 years with him being so sick and the challenges of having two kids. And obviously both kids are different. But I just noticed the way that I parented TJ more on that conscious, gentle parenting, whereas Patrick is more of a let's fly by the seat of our pants parenting right now. I noticed a difference in their personalities like that, and I definitely do want to like refocus back onto my more conscious and gentle parenting techniques and stuff like that. But I just like it's just wild to see like what you do in the beginning really does affect them throughout the rest of their life.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of different theories about, you know, exactly what age, you know, that they're developed. They say, you know, the first by age 12, we've kind of developed all of our belief systems. The first 5 years are the most important when it comes to like attachments and feeling securely attached to their parents. And a lot of that comes down to having our needs met. You know, I think a lot of times we become overwhelmed with children because they have so many needs. And one of the aspects of conscious parenting is to work on healing our own inner child. So the inner child is that child self in all of us that is still there, right? We were all children once. So the inner child is still a part of us. And the theory is that that is actually who is being triggered when our children are reacting in such a way that brings us to this state of emotional dysregulation.
So that's do you wild. Have recommendations for like strategies that parents who want to begin this journey of conscious parenting can start with? Like, is there a good starting point to begin this journey, or is it kind of just, it just really depends on where you are with your parenting as of right now?
Yeah, I'd say the first step is really just to think about what are my goals with my child? You know, if it's more behavioral, like I just want my child to do as I say when I say it, conscious parenting probably won't feel very aligned with you, because it's not about power and control. It's about cooperation, collaboration, working together as a team. So it takes away this, you know, not to say, right, the parent, obviously, at the end of the day, we we have authority over our children, right? We know what keeps them safe. But a big piece of conscious parenting is recognizing, like, when our ego is at play, when we're just telling them to do something because we want them to, not because it's in the benefit of the child. So I would say the first thing is to figure out, is this approach aligned with my values in life, how I want to raise my child? The second piece is really it's education. I'm actually working right now to put together a workshop that could then lead into like a conscious parenting support group for like-minded parents. I'm hoping to get that going by this fall. But I think if you're interested in seeing if this could be a helpful approach to you, Dr. Shefali has released several books on the topic. One of her earlier books is called The Conscious Parenting. She actually just recently released The Parenting Map, a step-by-step solution to consciously create the ultimate parent-child relationship. That book is broken down quite literally into steps, teaching you all the different aspects of conscious parenting, giving you different ways to practice. So if it interests you, I would say that would be a great place to start. There are lots of social media content creators that literally just promote this very specific kind of parenting. And again, it doesn't all have to just be this conscious parenting. It can be more of just learning skills and different ways to work with our children in order to create more cooperation. You know, there's sometimes different phrases can help us. Like when we ask, okay, in a given moment, when I'm faced with a parenting challenge, think about, you know, the story that you're telling yourself. If I'm reacting, meaning it's automatic, I'm not even thinking about what I'm going to do or say, chances are that's an indication that we're feeling triggered in that moment. One way that we can try to work on that, and it's always in hindsight, unfortunately, one of the most frustrating things about learning is we learn in hindsight. We have to make mistakes first in order to learn from them. So if I can recognize, hey, you know, I know for me personally, one of the things that triggers me the most with my kids is when I feel like I'm not being listened to, right? I'm not being heard. And sometimes that could simply be because, let's say dinner's ready and they're in the other room and I say, hey, girls, come into the kitchen, dinner's ready. And maybe I don't hear anything. It's crickets. They're still playing. Maybe I say it again, right? All of us parents have this thing with, why do I have to tell you so many times before you listen? Well, right. I don't know if you guys have ever tried to, if you were ever, let's say, on your phone texting somebody and your partner or somebody else is trying to talk to you at the same time. We quite literally cannot process information coming from two different sources at the same time. Our children are extremely present beings. They are very mindful. They are focused solely on what they are doing. So even if our children hear words coming from us, they may not be processing exactly what we're saying. So one of a helpful tool that we can use in a situation like that is to stop. Let's say I'm washing the dishes. Stop washing the dishes, walk into the other room where they are, get down on their level and say, hey, I see that you're having a really fun time playing. Dinner's ready, so let's all go sit down together. And that is something that I have control over comparatively to feeling like, oh, I have to scream at them to hear me, or I have to take away what their toys that they're playing with to hear me. We don't have to go that route. And conscious parenting has plenty of helpful examples when it comes to disciplining children versus like punishing children. It's very big on like natural consequences versus implementing specific punishments with our children. So really, again, the biggest idea is to enhance the relationship. How can we create the healthiest relationship? Because the long term is that as our teens grow up into teens and adults, they're going to feel safe to come to us when they have way bigger struggles than getting on their shoes to go to school, right? When they're faced with bullies, when they're faced with challenges of drugs or alcohol, relationships with other people, we want them as parents to feel safe to be able to tell us anything. And if you think about when you were a child, especially a teenager, what if you did feel safe with your parent, or if you didn't, think about why. What was it about my relationship with my caregiver that either enabled me or disabled me from feeling like I could go tell them this.
That's wild, because it's definitely like that reaction piece. Like when I think about my own personal childhood, about why I would or wouldn't tell my parents something, it's that reaction. And if I can work with my kids and get down on their level and not have this big, huge reaction when I want something done immediately, you know, that's not realistic. If I really love the idea of getting down on their level, talking to them, having that conversation versus shouting from the other room or, you know, assuming that they know to do it.
Yeah. And a lot of it too is reframing what we're telling ourselves about our kids. I think I used the example earlier when our kids are, let's say, throwing a tantrum or, you know, not listening to us. And the listening one is an interesting. I never thought about it in this way before, but it was brought to my attention that when we want our kids to listen to us, it's not just that we want them to hear what we're saying. We want them to do as we're saying. So we say, listen to me, but really what we're saying is obey me. Do as I tell you to do. I want you to obey me. And, you know, if you think about yourself in that situation with anybody else around you as an adult, we would think of that as extremely disrespectful to just assume that we're going to obey somebody else just because they said so, right? That typical because I said so parenting thing. And, you know, we all grew up with these kinds of, we call it like traditional parenting, right? Mm-hmm. It's not to, not to blame or paint it in a negative light. It's just with every generation of parenting, I see it as a positive thing that we can learn from our previous generations of what helped and what didn't help. And one of the biggest pieces from our generation that didn't help was the emotional neglect that we experienced. We did not experience, most of us, I'm not going to say everyone, a lot of us did not experience feeling like our emotions were validated, feeling like our emotions made sense to our parents. And our parents did the best that they could at that time. So trying to think of it in the sense of all we can do is the best we can do. Now we know that there is a better way as far as our emotional relationship to our children. So in order to do better, first we have to learn how. And that's where the self-compassion comes into play, because, you know, all of these things that we talk about, most of us have done before. Most of us have get mad and we feel triggered and we do react. And I think the beautiful thing about conscious parenting is we're not judging that. We're trying to recognize it. Every single conscious parent will tell you, it's not that I don't ever feel reactive anymore. It's not that my tone of voice isn't harsh. It's not that I never yell. It's that I'm so much more aware of it when it happens. And the most important piece of the conscious parenting practice is working on our repair after we react.
So
I was just going to say, going back to the example with, you know, if my kid's screaming and we're getting in the car anyway, taking the time to, as soon as I can calm down and regulate, the faster the better, but sometimes it also has to just be time and place, right? Bedtime is a great time to connect with our children, talking about the day. You know, mommy got so mad earlier. It was not fair of me to yell at you. I'm working really hard on taking deep breaths when my body feels frustrated. What it does is it takes away our child's sense of responsibility for our feelings.
So that's kind of what I was going to touch on. Like how, I mean, no one is perfect. We are all going to have those bad days where we explode. And I guess I was more like, and I think you answered it with the bedtime routine as well, or the bedtime to unwind. But, you know, how when we have those moments of where we, you know, react probably a little bit more than we would like to, you know, what are some of the best ways to kind of fix the situation? Like, is it best to just like apologize or kind of sit down and talk about why it happened? I know personally, like I've had a couple big reactions with TJ. And I realized that I wasn't reacting at him. He was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I sat down and talked to him like, look, I'm so sorry. Mommy is not feeling good. I have a lot going on. I should not have taken out my frustration out on you. You know, I am very, very sorry. You did not do anything wrong. mommy, you know, I messed up and I do apologize. But I just didn't know if there was like a better way to be able to do that when you do have those big reactions. Because I know all of us are not perfect and we're all going to have those moments.
Absolutely. And depending on how quickly we can regulate ourselves, right? If we need time, sometimes it will be later in the day. If I, let's say I say something and I know, so my thing, I'm not a yeller, but I have a tone of voice that I know sounds harsh or disrespectful. So if I can hear it, and the goal is eventually that my daughters will be able to say like, hey, mommy, you know, your tone of voice was kind of harsh. And one of the techniques we have, and we can implement this with our children and ourselves, we teach our children by doing it ourselves, is creating redos. So let's say I yell at them to, right, I'm yelling or I have a harsh tone to come eat dinner. Oh, gosh, you know, I noticed that my voice sounded kind of harsh or kind of rude. Did you hear that? Can I have a redo? I'm going to try and say that again in a kinder tone. So it's literally just like, let's try to have a redo. If I'm emotionally dysregulated, let's say I've gotten to the point where I know nothing that comes out of my mouth is going to sound kind. It's not going to be good. I will do my best to say, my body is feeling very frustrated right now. I need to go take a minute and do some breathing. And I will literally go into another room. My children both may be screaming at this point, and I know that for all of our sanities, I need to remove myself. I need to take a break. Sometimes my kids will be pounding on the door. And as best as you can, whether it's plugging your ears, whether it is putting headphones in to listen to some like soothing music, whatever you can do in a 2 to 3 minute time frame that gets you back to at least somewhat regulated to then be able to go back out. And, you know, a big thing in conscious parenting is attunement. Our children feed off of our energy, which is one of the reasons why it's like we're trying to put out fire with fire when we're reacting to them. And that's why it doesn't work. That's why we get to a point of whether it's screaming, you know, for some people it's spanking or using physical punishment. And all that does, you know, some people think, well, you know, my kid needs this. They need a stronger hand. And really what it does is it teaches our children to be fearful. It doesn't teach children to respect us. It teaches our children to be fearful of what could happen. And it quite literally just shuts them down. It doesn't teach them how to actually regulate their emotion.
I love the redo. I am literally going to do that. Well, I hope I don't do it today, but next time I have a moment, I am totally going to do a redo because that is amazing. Because then it kind of adds a little bit of, I mean, my life is very humor and sarcastic, and that's kind of what our household is like, but it kind of adds a little bit of humor to it. Like we could do a redo, you know, let's rewind, you know, how, absolutely. And that's a good teaching aspect too, because especially when TJ says something unkind to his brother or does something unkind to his brother or Patrick does something unkind to TJ, we could do a rewind and revisit how we could make the situation better and what could we have done differently to make it an easier moment. I love that. I am doing a redo all the time now. Like, thank you, Alicia. And, like, oh my goodness.
Absolutely. And you know, taking the redo, what it does, you know, I heard you say like, I hope I don't do it today. Even if you do it today, we are quite literally teaching our children that it is okay to make mistakes. And that we can learn from them, that no human is perfect, right? This is how we work on that perfectionism. You don't have to get straight A's in order for me to love you. You don't have to be the star in the basketball team to be worthy of love. And this is what children internalize when all we focus on is their achievements, right? We live in a very achievement-based society, and it is not helping the relationship our children are building with themselves. So where can we start to work on that for them? Because right now, quite frankly, we have a epidemic of teenagers and children experiencing anxiety and depression at way higher rates than we've ever seen before.
Oh, so it's heartbreaking. I think,
yeah. Yeah, it is.
Coming from an educator standpoint, I think that even conscious parenting as an educator would be helpful, because there's some teachers who are very reactive and they're not thinking about, okay, well, let's pause and think about this situation and do we need to do a reset? Because I know in my classroom, like there, you know, when you have 26 first graders or whatever, you have those moments where it gets overwhelming or it's chaos. And we have done the reset and okay, let's stop. Everybody go back and let's try again and let's figure out what we can do better this time. But I do think that, you know, people who even aren't parents yet, this would be helpful just to see, you know, interacting with children in general. Because I know that sometimes people are quick to judge that parent when you're out at a grocery store and you see the kid having a meltdown and the parent is just, you know, trying to do their best to fix the situation. But we need to be more aware of, okay, that parent is doing the best that they can and they're trying to figure out how to reset the situation before dragging a screaming child out of the store, you know?
Absolutely. So, and I, you know, I think those, that's one of those experiences where we've all been there. If you haven't, you'll be there at some point, right? We know that part of our human nature is to react. Our children quite literally do not have the tools to know how to regulate themselves. It is normal, expected, and healthy for our children to have tantrums. The way we show up for our child during a tantrum is very important for them to learn, hey, my parent can handle my big feelings. I don't have to shut it down, right? If we think about as an adult, we all have different ways that we cope. I don't know many adults that say I can completely 100% regulate my emotions. So why do we make an assumption that our child should be able to? Right. It's almost like we have these expectations for our children that sometimes are not realistic. And, you know, again, when I think about the research there, Dan Siegel is a very popular one who has taken great lengths. He wrote the Whole Brain Child. I'm not sure if you've heard that one before, but he quite literally talks about the development of our child's brains and what we can expect for them to be able to do and not be able to do based on how old they are. And, you know, I think most of us can say, okay, I don't have any expectations that my infant isn't going to cry, right? That's literally the only way that they can let us know something's going on. But for some reason, once they hit maybe that 1-2 mark where they're starting to use words a little bit more, we change our expectations. We see it as an inconvenience, and sometimes it is, right? I think that's one of the hard parts of parenting is there's beautiful moments and there are moments that are not so beautiful, and how important it is for us to be able to show up for our children when they are having big emotions, because they're not doing it to manipulate you. They're not doing it to try to, you know, ruin the rest of your day. They're doing it because they're telling you they have a need that is not being met. And from a generation of adults who are very unaware of what our own needs are, I think that that's one of a big reason why our children's needs can trigger us so much. You know, I think one of the phrases I think of when I say that is, oh, they're just doing it for attention. Well, all humans have a natural need to experience attention. If attention is a triggering word for you, we can easily reframe that into connection. My child is craving connection right now.
Right.
And we may not have the capacity to give it to them at that moment, but we could respond in a kinder way, such as, I see that you're wanting to connect with mommy right now. I'm washing the dishes and then I will come play with you for a few minutes. Right? We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to give in to their needs and wants in that moment. It's actually better to, you know, when you think about instant gratification these days, if they can wait a couple of seconds to a minute, that is a great practice for our kids instead of trying to do all and be all the second that, you know, they want it. Because in today's society, you know, there's so much instant gratification that it can be really helpful to practice patience. You know, in our house, we practice counting to 10 a lot for a lot of different things. And it simply could just be practicing that particular skill.
So as parents are reflecting and thinking about their practices, and it could also just be their mental health in general, what do you suggest they think about when deciding if it's time to seek therapy or coaching? And, you know, how do they know which one is the best route for them?
Yeah, I would say therapy, Either one. If I notice I'm really struggling, everybody's different. So again, it comes into play of what are your beliefs? You know, some people have very poor ideas or beliefs about what it means if I go to therapy. Is it going to be helpful for me to go to therapy if inside my head I'm telling myself it means that there's something wrong with me or I'm crazy or whatever these beliefs are? Mm-hmm. If that's the case, I mean, again, it's up to every person as an individual. Could I try it? Could I see what I could get out of it? Yes. And if coaching seems, let's say, less stigmatizing, maybe that's a place to start. There are so many parent coaches out here nowadays that specialize in different kinds of parenting styles. So again, and that's where it comes into play of trying to find what you align with, what your values are, what you want your home life to look like with your children, what you want your relationships to look like with your children, and then seek someone with that similar mindset. You know, there's no judgments towards the way that anybody parents, because I do believe that we all do the best that we can with the knowledge and information that we have at hand. And we know that just because I know something doesn't mean that it suddenly makes it easy, which is why, you know, my idea of forming the support group, it's been on my mind for years, right? It's just, yeah, right, parenting and working, it gets in the way of all those other things. But trying to find, you know, and that's one of the things I love about what you guys are doing with the Little Adventures Group, is trying to help people find their tribe. And that tribe could look different for different people. If I know that I'm struggling with something, and maybe I tried to read this book and it doesn't seem to be helping. Everybody's different as far as guidance goes. I know for myself, working one-on-one with someone is so helpful in the day-to-day. I know that for therapy, if I've struggled with major mental health, if I know I have unprocessed trauma from my childhood, parenting is going to be so, so difficult. And that, I would say, is definitely something to start on in therapy, to address the childhood trauma. Anything that's unprocessed can create conflict. And, you know, Dr. Shefali says it a lot you could listen to her online. You can find her in a lot of different places, but she talks a lot about how, you know, if we experience, let's say abuse when we were children, if we experience, whether it's emotional or physical, if we know that we have a pattern of unhealthy relationships, we know that we don't have the tools to show up as the parent that we want to be. And to know that that's not our fault, it's just the way that kind of life's cards were dealt. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to do better because we have the ability to learn better. I see it as empowerment and, again, self-compassion all the time, but trying to empower ourselves to learn not only for our children, but also for ourselves, right? Going back to that inner child, knowing, hey, I deserved to feel connected to my parent. I deserved to know it was okay to cry. This kind of mentality really can help us find the motivation to take those steps into therapy or coaching or just picking up a book and reading.
Well, yeah. I just want to thank you so much, Alicia, for joining us today. And I feel like we've learned so much. And for all of our listeners today, if they wanted to have you as a coach, or if they wanted any information about conscious parenting, what are the best ways for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can go to my website. It's www.counselingforconscioushealing.com. Also, or you could email me. My email address is alicia@counselingforconscioushealing.com. And those are the two best ways to get in touch with me. I certainly will put it out on social media once I get this group designed. I was thinking about doing like a informational meeting, you know, just for everyone to come and kind of hear what it's about, and then making a decision if they'd like to, you know, sign up for the workshop. I'm thinking probably like a 1 or 2 day workshop that we all go through together and then create a support group from that.
That is amazing, Alicia. I would love to go to that meeting and participate in that workshop because I think you have so much knowledge and so much. I'm just so excited. I'm so excited to watch you grow. I'm excited for your workshop. I'm excited for your group. Like, this is amazing. You are so awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on here. I could talk about this stuff all day, so I love it.
So if you could leave our listeners with one final piece of advice or insight, what would you want to tell them?
One insight. I would say think about the love that you want to experience forever with your child. I'd say think about how you want that relationship to look. And maybe it comes from things you either experienced or didn't experience in your own childhood. Because the more that you can focus on the desires of what you want the relationship to look like, that's going to help you work through the aspects of conscious parenting that seem so difficult. Because I'll be honest, it's hard. It is really, really hard work. I've been educating myself about this for 6 years. My oldest is 4 and a half. So I've been getting to practice in person for over four years. And while I can say that I have made leaps and bounds of progress, there are still moments that I have to go into the other room while my kids are crying to, you know, give myself time to breathe. There are plenty of redos in our house. There are, right, all of the things. So self-compassion, educate ourselves, and just keep loving, keep reminding yourself why you're doing it in the first place. And it's because of how much you love your child.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Alicia. And to everybody listening, we will link Alicia's website and email address and the books that she recommended as well, all in the description in the podcast. And thank you so much for listening. Alicia, thank you so much for being here. And once the workshop is up and running, we would love to have you back on again to talk about the success of it.
Absolutely. I'd love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.